Fast forward a few hundred years, and famous Austrian psychologist Sigmund Freud, 1856 to 1939, came up with his own way of describing someone's personality and identity. Perhaps the best-known model of personality, though somewhat dubious in real-life effectiveness and application, is known as the structural model of personality. You know it as the three components of the id, ego, and superego. Freud believed that a person's psyche was centrally controlled by these three unconscious components, which were locked in eternal battle. He also believed that each component had a direct influence over the other, thus shaping someone's personality. Just like humorism, if there was any imbalance between the three components, it would give rise to certain types of personalities and identities, and related disorders. Id. Just give it to me. I want it now. The id follows the pleasure principle. Basically, a person will behave solely in a manner to collect a reward in the end. The id is the primitive and instinctive component of all three. As such, it functions solely on fulfilling those primal drives, such as hunger, sex, and all forms of pleasure. It is a single-minded drive. An infant is the perfect representation of the id because an infant only knows what it wants and cries when it is not received. Infants are impulsive and lack the ability to empathize or control themselves. It's only later that a newborn can actually develop an ego and superego through learned situations. The infant wanting dessert has no regard for reality. Instead, he is wishful in his thinking and wants that dessert if it's the last thing he'll ever get. This is where ego comes into play. Ego. I really want that, but how can I realistically get it? The id can't last forever in the real world in conjunction with other people and their own needs. The ego eventually takes over the id as the principle of reality. It helps a person acknowledge that there are limitations and external factors to someone's behavior. The same child will learn that he may not always get a dessert, especially if he acts up and throws his food around the kitchen. These were factors that weren't ever present before, and he's able to acknowledge now. Think of the ego as being the mediator between the struggles of unrealistic id and reality. Basically, this is where a child learns to make decisions while actually weighing consequences and things other than bare desire. Reasoning is one characteristic of the ego, as opposed to the more irrational id. The ego works by strategizing realistic ways to meet the demands of the id. This process usually means that there must be a compromise at some level. Sometimes it's necessary to postpone rewards so that one won't feel the negative consequences when reacting irrationally. The ego is more aware of social norms and decencies, thus teaching a person how to compose himself or herself in situations. There's no right or wrong. The goal of the ego is to attain reward without harm. In a power struggle, the ego will always fall to the id, but then there's the superego. Superego. I want that, but not if it makes me a terrible person. The superego helps the individual identify values and morals set by society and forces him or her to be more self-aware. Basically, the superego is the conscience sitting on your shoulder and asking whether you should do something or not. The superego can also be seen to suppress the primal urges of the id, but in a different way from the ego. Remember, the ego suppresses the id by reminding it of the practical realities of the world, while the superego suppresses the id by giving a test of values and morals before acting. And how do these three elements manifest? Suppose an infant initially believed that he could finish his meal and then a dessert would always come after, his id. However, he didn't account for other factors while he ate his dinner. If he threw his food around and made a mess, he learned that this was deemed as a negative behavior that could alter his happy ending, his ego. Finally, he felt shameful about disrespecting his parents and learned to correct his behavior in the future, his superego. Overall, Freud concluded that the three components of the psyche all had their own interests at play. This is what caused a person to think and act in a particular way. The child first acted out of selfishness and eventually learned to channel his emotions not only in favor of himself, but also to meet social norms. Many psychologists were greatly influenced by the works and studies of Freud. But the fact that his structural theory relies completely on unconscious drives makes it nearly impossible to prove and quantify. It becomes too inconsistent without data to study and confirm the id's or ego's existence and role. Thus, it can necessarily only remain a theory, which isn't so helpful for our goals of analyzing people from objective data points and psychological phenomena. Yet again, it is part of the puzzle of analyzing people because it shows the different forces that can drive people's behavior. If we're looking for more hard data and evidence on how to analyze others, we'll need to start looking at anthropology and biology. That's exactly what started to happen once the technology was sufficiently advanced. One biological perspective of identity is that the range of personalities and traits we display are a result of natural selection. In other words, the traits that people have now were more vital to their ancestors, and what remain are only the most useful of traits. The well-known principle of survival of the fittest is considered to have created at least the baseline for our modern personalities. Over time, survival of the fittest made people begin to develop characteristics that are split into two specific categories, intrasexual traits and intersexual traits. These are the two types of traits that assist in proliferating as a species. Intrasexual traits are what attract the opposite sex. They are mating displays, how we instinctually emphasize masculinity or femininity, charm and wit, and generally what feelings of love and affection are drawn from. When two people meet, they display particular traits that keep the other interested and engaged. The better they are at these traits, the more successful they are with mating and dating. Over time, these became instinctual behaviors that inform our personalities. Intersexual traits are what allow us to defeat rivals of the same sex for mating, dating, relationships, and all goals involving the opposite sex. In other words, how we compete and win. These traits ask the question, what makes us a more desirable mate than someone else? They make us more feminine or masculine, but this time in an attempt to stand out. Over time, these competitive drives also become instinctual parts of our identities, and of course, people possess them to various degrees. In terms of the direct physiological structure of our brains, contemporary scientists found that there is a direct correlation between the sizes of various brain structures and different personality traits. At the University of Minnesota, a study asked subjects to answer a series of questions pertaining to personality. Then the subjects were also given a brain imaging test where specific regions of their brains were photographed and studied. The data set consisted of categorizing the study participants into five different factors for personality traits, the Big Five, which will be covered in greater detail shortly: conscientiousness, agreeableness, extroversion, openness, neuroticism. The following conclusions were found. Researchers were able to discover that extroverted people tend to have a bigger medial orbital frontal cortex. This is located right above and behind the eyes. People considered to be more conscientious had larger lateral prefrontal cortexes. Neurotically driven individuals had bigger brain regions such as the cortices, which meant this was responsible for their negative emotions. Agreeable people also had larger cortical regions. However, as opposed to neurotic people, these regions are a little more wrinkled and folded. This meant they are able to empathize with others and their thoughts. It is still unclear as to how brain regions correspond with openness and intellect. The results speak for themselves. They could now directly relate a person's brain graph to how this person behaves. This is a very real biological basis for differences in personality and identity. Nature versus nurture is always a compelling debate, and this demonstrates they will always be inseparable. While it's not quite practical to subject friends, new and old, to a brain imaging scan to understand their personality better, we're starting to get closer to the focus of this book, being able to read and analyze people through observations and objective data points. This has been Think Like a Psychologist, how to analyze emotions, read body language and behavior, understand motivations, and decipher intentions. Written by Patrick King, narrated by Russell Newton. Copyright 2019 by Patrick King. Production copyright by Patrick King.